Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. The discourse where the Buddha points out the necessity of kind of the different factors that need to be utilized while we're meditating, practicing, developing the mind, and he compares it to a goldsmith, a goldsmith or a goldsmith's apprentice takes the gold and puts it into the crucible and puts it over the fire and at different points in time, then he needs to either fan the fire or he needs to sprinkle water on it or he needs to just watch it closely so that there's these different things that need to be done for the goldsmith. And I'm saying similarly, in the meditation, in the practice, sometimes one has to put an emphasis on the aspect of settling, of samadhi, of focusing the mind. Sometimes one needs to bring up effort or energy, and at other times one has to just look on with equanimity. So that these are elements in our meditation as we pick up our theme of meditation that we need to be attentive to. And in the same way that if the say the goldsmith just sort of gets on the bellows and starts cranking the fire up like crazy, then that might not work very well. Or kind of sprinkling water on it to cool it down sort of slows the whole process down. Or just sort of looking on with equanimity, maybe nothing much happens at all. Similarly, if the in the mind, if one is focusing excessively on the samadhi element, the settling, the kind of tranquility side of things, then the mind can be overwhelmed or inclined too much to kind of a laziness or a kind of a torpor or turgidity within the mind, not balanced. Or if one focuses too much on the application of effort side of things, it could lead to restlessness. Or if one just looks on with equanimity, then there might not be the right balance for the proper ending of defilements. So that each of these qualities has a place, and each of these applications and activities have a place, and we need to use our mindfulness and our discernment to see more clearly what's useful, what's needed, what is going to actually bring about a brightness, a clarity, a malleability of the mind that allows it to both to settle, to be bright, and to relinquish. So that we need to be attending to these qualities. And in picking up our meditation, then really using the meditation object, the theme of meditation, to be reflecting, how do we get this balance, how do we get this quality that is suitable for the mind to shed its obstructions. And it's not as if there's a set absolute sort of pattern. There are these parameters that we work within, but we've got to figure out what actually works. So that picking up the theme of meditation, say, right, mindfulness of breathing, then paying attention to, okay, where does it work to hold attention? Does it work to hold the attention at the tip of the nose? Does it help to at the abdomen? Does one move one's awareness through the body as one's breathing? And it isn't as if there's an absolute right way or a wrong, absolute wrong way. It's what actually works. What is it that gives that balance? And to be attentive to what is it that allows awareness to stand out, and then the different obstacles or hindrances to fall away. So that reflecting, investigating, experimenting. There's a nice image that Ajahn Chah uses. He said, in the same way that oil and water don't mix, that mind of awareness and the thoughts and obsessions in the mind, they don't really mix. Of course, that isn't most of our experience. when there is that balance, when there is that attentiveness and alertness, then there is a kind of separation. That awareness, that quality of knowing, stands out. It doesn't mix with the moods and the impressions of the mind. And it isn't as if it's has to annihilate it and destroy it, or has to be averse and repelled by it. It's just that it doesn't mix. It doesn't make sense to mix. It doesn't make sense to clutter awareness with things that aren't aware. And realize, it can be there. Awareness can stand on its own. It isn't as if it doesn't recognize or know it. And it's like the definition that the Buddha gives of as the mind is settling and the developing of samadhi. There's a phrase that he uses, viviche vakamehi, vivicha akusalehi dammehi. So that withdrawn from sensual pleasures, withdrawn from unwholesome mental states, or secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unskillful mental states. And that's there's that kind of withdrawing, seclusion that happens. And it's through this quality of a balance. It's through this application of mindfulness, awareness, alertness, attentiveness, that it clarifies. So that in our meditation, you're picking up the meditation object, picking it, say, like the breath, and letting the awareness kind of take interest and take a hold of the object of the meditation, letting that following it, taking interest with it, being present with the sensation of the of the breath as it comes in, as it goes out. And inevitably there's going to be thoughts arising, different moods, different impressions. And it doesn't require an annihilation of the different thoughts. It doesn't require, you know, getting worried and uptight or frustrated because there are different thoughts. That's actually what the mind does. It's function of the mind to have thoughts, to have associations, to have memories, to have feelings. It's what the mind does, so that you don't have to argue with it, you don't have to fight with it, you don't have to be confused by it. It's just what it does. Doesn't mean you have to take an interest, and doesn't mean you have to squash it. It's, you know, it's like children, small children. I mean, you know, they can't sit still. They can't sort of make a whole lot of sense. You know, they have children's interest and children's kind of obsessions and children's kind of moods that sort of swing back and forth. And if you're sitting and, say, having a conversation with somebody else, and there's a child playing, and a child sort of crawling around, a child, they're just doing what children do, and you know, you don't have to get the, you know, sit down, shut up, kid. It's just, you know, you just don't have to get involved. They're going to do what it's going to do. And if you ever seen, seen like an adult sometimes trying to reason with a child to make it to comply with your wishes, or trying to force it or getting angry with it, you know, stop crying or I'll beat you. Remember, it's at Mark Lieberman's. He has this, his son has this sign on the door. I can't remember, something like, you know, the beatings will continue until the
The beatings won't stop till morale improves.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah. So the beatings won't stop till morale improves. Well, that's how we treat the mind so often, and we don't let it be. We don't let go. We don't dwell in awareness, and so then we don't experience the well-being of the mind, so that as we attend to the breath, then just allow that awareness to take root, to nurture that, to look after it. And it's like with the mind, the different moods and thoughts will come, and we keep lifting up the object of attention. And we have to do something. We can't, and again, this is where this being attentive to these different, the settling of the mind, the samadhi element, the tranquility aspect, or the effort aspect, or the equanimity. There's different balances that are needed. But we need to keep lifting up the object of attention. And then inevitably, you know, there'll be, you know, different thoughts and whatnot come in. And it's just taking that interest, nurturing the quality of awareness. And if the thoughts or impressions start to pull us in different ways, we cease to be secluded from sensual pleasures. We cease to be secluded from unwholesome mental states. Then we need to lift up the object of awareness again. We need to keep And so that's where the effort comes, lifting that object of attention up, and then looking on with equanimity, not reacting to the natural habits of the mind, the natural tendencies of a human mind, and all of the things that come into the sphere of sense impressions. So that as we attend to that, then as we continue to attend to it, there's a natural feeling of well-being that arises, because it feels good. It feels good to stay with awareness rather than letting the mind proliferate all over the place, or taking exception to it, or getting upset at it, or getting confused by it. It's just this, as the attention to awareness starts to stand out more, there's a natural feeling of well-being that arises. There's a kind of exhilaration that comes to the mind as you see the possibilities of the peaceful mind. You see the possibilities of discernment, and then to be able to stay with that, to delight in that, and allow that to come back into the body, and bringing that in. And this is where the classical description of the first jhana, vitakka vichara piti sukha ekagata. This is how it actually works. There's that vitakka of the lifting up of the object of attention, the directed thought, vichara as evaluation. It's looking and attentive and recognizing, well, what's useful, what's peaceful, what's satisfying. And of course, then it wanders again. You have to lift attention up. And then as that process starts to, the awareness starts to take root after having nurtured it, sort of the quality of knowing starts to be more solid. Then there's a natural response to that, both physically and mentally, is this a well-being, an ease, a relaxation, a settling, a happiness that comes into both the body and the mind. And to allow that, to feel that through the whole body, to be attentive to letting that the body relax, letting the mind relax, let the mind settle, but maintaining that quality of alertness and attentiveness without squashing it, without squeezing it, without forcing it too much, because we can that kind of grasping and that sense of trying to make it fit into one's conception of it, or trying to make it be permanent somehow, or trying to hold on to it and claim ownership over it, that squashes it, and then it slips away from us. So then we're just working with that, experimenting with it, and then feeding it back into the body-mind system, letting the body settle, letting it relax, letting it feel comfortable. And then awareness starts to stand out. And that's where the image that the Buddha uses of the bathman's bathman or the bathman's apprentice kind of kneading and working the bath soap, bath powder, so that it has a consistency where it's not too sloppy and wet, it's not too dry and powdery, it's not falling out anywhere. It's the image that one has for the awareness and well-being, as well as the thought processes. And one brings that into the body, and that's where the Buddha actually sort of says, one, I don't remember the idiom exactly, but it's an experience in the body, that the happiness of seclusion is experienced in the body, and that's a, you know, it's a grounding, settling experience. So to be attentive to that, to look after that, to nurture it, and one finds that's the quality of applying the settling of the mind without it getting dull, applying the effort without it getting restless, looking on with equanimity and balance. These are the qualities we have to be applying, and that's where it settles. And there's another image that Ajahn Chah uses of said, like attending to our meditation object, like a, he said, it's like when we take a relative or a friend, they come and visit us, and then, of course, then they go home. And you look after them, you take care of them, then you take them to the train station or the bus station, and then they depart. And he said, in the same way, we look after our meditation object. We bring it in, we look after it, but we're attentive, careful, delighting in that, the company of that. But when the mind goes out, then you don't follow your relative's home or your friend home. You just send them off, and you return to your home. You stay in your home. So that's, you know, similar with our meditation object. We look after it, the breath comes in and goes out, the mind starts to drift off somewhere, and we return to our home, we return to our anchor, we return to our base, and look after that, maintain that. And it's that quality of a balance that allows us to be attentive to relinquishment. In the sense that relinquishment is not, you're not having to push anything away or trying to annihilate anything. It's just as, it's that, well, that image that I gave at the first of Ajahn Chah saying the, you know, the difference between oil and water. The oil is not going to mix. And the same way, that's the quality of relinquishment. It's just like a preserving a certain autonomy. And not in a fearful way, or not in a desperate, clingy way. It's just sort of allowing it to be, for awareness to follow its nature, and to be attentive to that. And you realize the quality that in the Thai forest tradition, where they talk about the puru, the one who knows. So that staying with that one who knows, and it's that, say, the one who knows, just knowing the way things are. It's like this, knowing the way things are, knowing that, oh, this is what a mood is like, this is what an obsession is like, this is what an aversion is like. staying with the one who knows, rather than getting caught in the reactions, the reactivity, the obsessions. Just staying with the one who knows. And Ajahn Sumedho would always sort of say, "Yes, it's like the what the Buddha sees is the Dhamma. So the Buddha seeing the Dhamma, and that's what Buddha is seeing. So it's the one who knows seeing the way things are. It's that quality of the Buddha, the awakened quality of the Buddha, the knowing quality of the Buddha, is where we dwell. That's our refuge." And our refuge isn't in all of the manifestations of all the likes and dislikes and fears and worries and reactions that are possible in the human condition. We have the opportunity to be with the one who knows, to be one who is awakened, to be one who is has an inner radiance and clarity. So this is our opportunity. And it's just with each in-breath, each out-breath, learning how to create that balance, or to be attentive to that balance and seeing that is really the worthy refuge. That is something that of true value. And all of the complications and proliferations and machinations that the mind can come up with they're really not worth it. This is where that making that very clear choice of, you know, do I want to suffer or not suffer? And when it's that kind of a choice, then it's really a no-brainer. We have that opportunity each moment, but we also need to cultivate the familiarity and the balance that allows us to be in touch with that. Allow it to seep into our being, because that's as we've been studying lately, recognizing that the primary meaning of the word sati, of mindfulness, is that aspect of memory, of recollection, and we need that because we keep forgetting. And it's so easy to forget, and to allow that mindfulness, alertness, clarity, attention, to remember, allow ourselves to turn attention back to this quality of knowing, taking this as a refuge. So I'll offer that for reflection this evening. Sada mayam namakataya sarva namadase sa